My name is Mark Franklin, and you're listening to Career Buzz. Today on your show, suits and ladders and tales from the recruiter, plus two book giveaways. This is Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Mark Balesh is president of TorontoJobs.ca, an internet and recruitment staffing company. He's also the author of a newly published book, Tales from the Recruiter, a Canadian recruiter's perspective on how to get that perfect job. Mark is a past guest on Career Buzz, and we've invited him back to share his views on his new book, to take your calls, and to give away a couple of books. Mark Balesh joins me in the second part of today's show, so stay tuned. First, Susan Fromstein interviewed 102 managers and consolidated their wisdom into one informative, easy-to-read, and entertaining survival guide called Suits and Ladders, 10 Proven Ways to Keep Your Job Safe. Her second book is called Inform, Influence, and Entertain Like a Pro, The 7 Deadly Sins of Public Speaking and How to Avoid Them. Before embarking on her speaking and writing career, Susan was Director of Communications at the Investment Funds Institute of Canada. Steve Key is one of those managers who Susan Fromstein interviewed for her book. He's Director of Media Relations at Insurance Bureau of Canada. Steve began his communications career in broadcasting. As a news and sports reporter, he worked as Assistant Vice President, Communications for Sun Life Financial, and Director of Corporate Communications for TMX Group. Steve is also an instructor with the School of Media Studies and Information Technology at Humber College. Susan Fromstein and Steve Key join me live in studio. Welcome you two to Career Buzz.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
So Susan, first to you, what do you like about your career these days?
I like the diversity of my career, and I love working with senior executives adding humor to their speeches, because I feel that corporate communications are dull and boring, and nobody's listening.
And so what are you doing? Are you writing speeches? You're writing books? What are all the things you're up to these days?
I do marketing content on a freelance basis, teaching on a freelance basis, speaking on a freelance basis, and writing books.
Great. And what skills or strengths do you draw on to be successful?
Perseverance, I think, and excitement and enthusiasm, because I love what I do. And because I love what I do, I have the dedication and to do what I do and to do it consistently.
Nice. And Steve Key, over to you. What are you liking about your career these days?
Well, you know, I find I'm really fortunate. I'm finally at a point in my career after being in broadcasting and corporate communications for almost 30 years now, where I'm dealing with something where I deal with a different issue every day.
Lots of variety.
And variety, and I think in terms of communications, it's how you position things and how the story gets out. It's always a battle every day.
Right on. And what are you doing? What is a communications AVP? What do you actually do?
Well, you know, a lot of this is how you take complicated concepts and make it interesting or informative for the average consumer. I deal a lot in insurance issues. So in Ontario, we talk a lot about the Ontario Auto Insurance File. We talk about adaptation to climate change because we've seen, you know, horrible cases of severe weather over the summer.
Yes.
And even that with the Alberta floods. I spent 7 weeks this summer back and forth to Alberta dealing with media front lines. So every day is different, and I could wake up with a different weather storm tomorrow and my life could take off in a different direction.
It sounds exciting.
It's exciting, but it also takes a tremendous toll on my wife, my family, the kids, because I am back and forth constantly. You know, sometimes you just want to be in the same location and not have that terrible situation I had at different times over the summer. I woke up, I wasn't sure what day it was or
yes,
what city I was in.
What skills do you use to be a successful communications executive?
I think a lot of it has to do with, I think we forget in communications sometimes that it is a game of communications, and it's really how you build and enhance your personal relationships. So I'm building relationships with our own stakeholders, our own executives, with the media, and with the general public, because everyone has an interest in some of the things that we're talking about.
We're talking to Steve Key and Susan Fromstein here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.FM. You guys, I want to get to the book in a couple of minutes, but just before I do, I'd like to hear a tiny bit of your own journeys, how you got to be where you are. Susan, you started your career in communications and moved into corporate work. What's a turning point in your career that you can share with listeners?
Well, I had a very successful consulting practice. Then I fell in love, and I basically abandoned my consulting practice, ran around in my relationship. Then I found that my relationship ended, so I didn't have a consulting practice, and I didn't have a relationship to fall back on. So I was 55 years old, and I figured, oh, well, I guess I better get a job because I need to pay the rent. So that's how I entered corporate. A client of mine of 20 years was kind enough to give me an opportunity. I was with him for 18 months. Then when the opportunity came to join IFIC, I jumped at it.
Because IFIC is the
Investment Funds Institute of
yes.
Canada. Because I had a lot of financial clients in my background, and it was a good fit, and it was an exciting opportunity. And I joined them and was restructured out of my position after 11 months. I was on an 18-month job search, and I agreed to move to Waterloo, actually. And I took a job that was lower than director of communications for a lower salary. But I justified in my own head the move because I was needed a job. And I figured I could buy real estate for cheaper in
Waterloo.
In Waterloo. So I justified it that way. And unfortunately, I was restructured out of that job after
twice.
Only 2 months, if you could believe it.
It's a trend.
Yeah. I hope not. But it certainly was based on my track record, yes.
I know you've also had some health issues in your life, and that's influenced your career and life journey. Can you say anything about that?
Well, it was very strange. I received a diagnosis of MS on October 8th, 2011, and I was restructured out of my job October 23, 2011. And here I was in a town where I didn't really know anybody, that I'd only moved for work, and I figured I'd better come back to Toronto. So I had sublet my apartment for 4 months, and when I came back, I couldn't very well kick out my tenant that had a lease for 4 months, even though I had come back from Waterloo after two, and I was basically homeless. So I got everything. I got a health issue, a financial issue, an emotional issue, and a housing issue. So I had it all thrown at me at the same time.
Lots of things all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're resilient because here you are with a smile on your face. How did you get through all of that?
Well, I think love of family was really big for me. I have two amazing sons. I was a single mother. I raised them on my own. And we have a standing date every Sunday for dinner. We're a very close family. So my kids were, and I had to rally, actually, to prove that I didn't want them to see that I was sitting in my pajamas most of the time with a clicker in my hand. So every Sunday I used to get dressed and make dinner. So I was able to pull it off until one day I finally got sorry. I got tired of feeling sorry for myself and sitting on the couch. So it mobilized me and I got curious. Well, there's absolutely nothing wrong with my hard skills. Why did I keep getting restructured?
Yes.
Yes.
It's interesting. Do you know that your story parallels? We had another guest that listeners would be familiar with, a well-known Dragon's Den star, Arlene Dickinson. She told a really similar story. At early 30s, she was lying on the couch feeling sorry for herself and had no career whatsoever to speak of. listeners can find that story in the Career Buzz archives. But interestingly, it sometimes takes getting to a certain negative point in your life. Things have to get bad enough until you finally say, wait a second, I'm going to pick myself up and do something. And it sounds like that's what happened with you.
It did. And I realized very early in my research that, as a matter of fact, my first interview, the person told me that I messed up. And I went, I did, but I was so good at what I did. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And he said, absolutely, you didn't establish any trust with your boss. So I realized very early on that this was going to be a huge learning experience for me, and I didn't want anybody else to have to go through what I did, and that inspired my journey.
And is that what inspired the books?
Yes.
So you've got now two books. How has it been for you to write and publish these books?
Very exciting. I'd always ghostwritten for others, so to have my own name in print is very rewarding.
Excellent. All right, we're going to come back and talk about the book in a moment. But Steve, let's hear a tiny bit about your story. I said in the intro you got started in broadcasting. Yeah. What led to your interest in that in the first place?
Well, I think that was something I wanted to do my entire life. And I remember as a little kid, you know, listening to the radio and thinking this would be the dream job. And I had a big interest in sports. So I went to the Humber Radio Broadcasting course back in 1980. And by 81, I was still in the course, but I had an opportunity to intern at CKO Radio, which was Canada's all news first and only,
yes,
no longer there, network. And I walked in the door. They handed me a microphone and said, you know, Maple Leaf Gardens is next door. Go interview some players. And for an 18, 19-year-old kid, this was the greatest thing in the world. And I thought, I am going to be a sportscaster for the rest of my life. Well, sports is a bit like the candy store of a radio station.
Yes.
And, you know, eventually I moved on to the newsroom. And as you get into the newsroom, you're always battling to get on the air to do things.
Yes.
So late 1980s, business stories were starting to be big. The market crashed, the whole thing that was going on. I did business stories, so I would be on the air twice an hour. And that led to the Toronto Stock Exchange recruiting me and saying, come here, we have media relations problems, maybe you can help us.
Wait a second. Not every broadcaster ends up going into corporate. And I was meaning to ask you about that because, you know, it's so interesting. That's a really big jump
to go from
broadcasting and communications into the corporate world. How was that transition?
Well, first of all, broadcasting pays next to nothing. But the corporate world pays a lot more. So I was newly married at that time, and I thought if the only way I'm going to be able to afford any kind of house in the future was to take this job, the transition was very difficult because you stop thinking like a reporter and you start thinking like a communications person. So it was on-the-job training. Now, today there are many corporate communications courses, public relations courses. In fact, I teach at the School of Media Studies at Humber now. But those disciplines weren't as developed as they are.
So this was a learn-by-doing situation.
Exactly. And I was dealing with an organization that had struggled, and then I just did more and more. And I spent 20 years there. So from a career perspective, that is strange because you say, well, you don't want to stay in a place a long period of time. But the Toronto Stock Exchange gave me every opportunity to grow. Sent me to school in the States. I was able to do a lot of different things that I would never have been able to do moving around from job to job. After 20 years there and many acquisitions, the TSX becoming a public company,
yes,
I did very, very well. I think I was looking for something on the other side of the street, and I was recruited again by Sun Life to go work for them. I arrived at Sun Life in 2008, just in time for the global market meltdown. And within 2 years, my job had become redundant.
Well, there's a little bit of a theme today on jobs becoming redundant and restructuring.
So
it happens. You have to be resilient.
I think I was lucky that I had at that time met my current wife, who was a real inspiration to try to keep me positive and keep me focused.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I help her in her career. She helps me in my career, and as a result, I was able to start my own company for a while, do some work for some clients, worked with a PR agency briefly, and then the insurance bureau job came up. And if there was ever a job I felt I was born to do, this has been the job. I'm so grateful for the opportunity, and I have fun every day. And I don't know if that's because my personal life is in a great space right now or if the job is in a great place, but one and the other go hand in hand.
I think you're right, and I'm hearing that from a lot of guests on the show and clients from our career counseling practice, that it's very much an integrated thing, career and life. And I was encouraged to hear you talk about the support you get from your wife. I mean, it's your career and your personal life, they intersect in all of these ways.
And, you know, it's not to say that every day is perfect, and we have our disagreements on things, but I think I've given her confidence to help her career, and I think she's given me the support that allows me to build on my career.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're both in interesting places in your career now, and you were both part of the book. So I want to just get to the book here. Susan, it was your book called Suits and Ladders, 10 Proven Ways to Keep Your Job Safe. And you interviewed 102 people. So first of all, how did you come up with the idea to do this?
Well, I wanted to talk to a few people. I originally had 100 in my mind. I always shoot big. Figured go big or go home. And I hadn't realized how long it would take. It took me about a year of research, both to identify and do personal interviews with my 102.
And then, Steve, you got involved in the project somewhere along the line. What was the connection there? How did you get involved in this project?
Well, we've known each other. Susan and I have known each other from various groups and organizations, just communication circles that go through. When you're connecting with people, you're always trying to find people that may be able to open doors for you. And you know, I've offered up certain things to Susan. She's, you know, put me in a certain direction. We both belong to a group of sort of freelance people who do a lot of work. And she approached me and said, can I interview for the book? And I said, sure, absolutely. You know, interview me and I'll tell you everything I can possibly tell you about the workforce. And I think after about an hour, you know, you probably had enough to write a section. And even though you don't get attributed necessarily in the book to what you've said, I can understand and read and see the quotes from me in there.
Excellent. Well, we're going to have listeners call in, especially if you have a comment or question. Listeners, we have, Susan, one book, two books? How many do we have to give away to listeners?
I have a total of 2 Suits and Ladders and 2 Inform, which is a public speaking manual.
Oh, excellent. So I'm going to give out the numbers, and do tell us. Maddie and Ryan here are going to be on the phones, and so if you have a comment or question and you want to come on the air, we'd love to have you. The phone number is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. So give us a call and you can win one of the books. Now, the subtitle of the book, Susan, is, 10 Proven Ways to Keep Your Job Safe. So what's one proven way to keep your job safe? Where can we start?
Well, we can start with number one, which is self-awareness. And I wasn't very self-aware. If I was more self-aware, And one would ask, what does a woman your age get through life with not being self-aware? And that's because I never, I don't think I ever thought about how I thought and how my personality and how my background affected how I behaved in the workforce. Now, there's good and bad with respect to that. I have very strong work ethic. I have high personal standards, and I got that from my parents. But had I been more self-aware, I probably wouldn't have chosen the employment route. I would have spent the year rebuilding my practice, which is where I've gone full circle. That's where I'm at right now anyways. And or I would have had a plan that, knowing very quickly, because I was very frustrated at the client's office who was wonderful to give me the opportunity, but it was clear from the very beginning that I wasn't a good fit.
You say in the book here that 91% of mentors say it's the top rated method here, self-awareness, as a way to keep your job safe. Steve, here's self-awareness. I mean, it's a broad term, and I think everybody would like to say that they're self-aware, but sometimes they're not as self-aware as they think they are. From your perspective, what is there in terms of self-awareness that's important with respect to keeping your job?
Well, I think you have to know how you fit within an organization. Every organization has a different culture. When I was interviewing for the job at my latest job, I said to them, I'm a certain type of personality. And, you know, part of me, it's almost as if I have two personalities, this very business-like person and then this a bit of a radical who pushes things outside the lines. I often say I color outside the lines. And for the insurance bureau at the time, I guess they were looking for someone who would be a little bit more quotable and to inject a little personality and had the relationship. So I was the good fit at that time. But I'm not your typical corporate person, and surprising, I lasted 20 years at the stock exchange in a very, I would say, tight organization.
Yes.
Yeah. If I do up my top button on my shirt with my tie, it's a rarity. I'm not quite Rob Ford-esque, but I like to think that I inject a little bit of humor and a little bit of fun into every day.
Well, you don't have your top button done up now.
No, not
so
now.
I can see you're being self-aware and being a little bit, as you say, coloring outside the lines. So we're talking to Susan Fromstein and Steve Key here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.FM. And we've got a couple of books to give away. So listeners, three ways to get in touch here and let us know if you have a comment or question. First and easiest is give us a call at 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. You can shoot me an email at mark@careercycles.com, or let us know what you're thinking or a question that you have on Twitter. It's @careercycles. Again, that number, 416-946-7000, and you can get a copy of Susan's book, Suits and Ladders, which I guess is a play on snakes and ladders, and people might, hopefully they get that. How come you chose the title, Susan?
Well, it's interesting. I originally wanted the title of Corporate Condoms, not because it was how to have a safe affair at the workplace, but because it was for safe relations at the workplace. And I thought, okay. Except I was talked out of that great title by my PR buddies, and who said to me that, well, if they were a CEO of a corporation with 5,000 people, they would not give their staff a book called Corporate Condoms. They will give their staff a book with some other title that's more politically correct. And my eldest son, who's a graphic artist who designed the book as well, did the print layout and the cover design, actually came up with the cover, Suits and Ladders. Somebody said I should write a sequel called Suits and Adders, and I'm thinking about it.
Well, listeners, if you have an opinion on whether Corporate Condoms is a good title for a book or not, let us know with a call, with your comment or question, 416-946-7000 or mark@careercycles.com or on Twitter @careercycles. So that's one of the top 10 proven ways to keep your job safe, with a few jokes thrown in. Susan, what's another one?
I think that, well, I had 3.5 out of 10, so I know why I failed in terms of the 10. One of the ones that I did have was to have an excellent reputation, to become the kind of colleague that people could go to get things done and to deliver exactly what you said you were going to do it when you said you were going to do it. So I did have a stellar reputation, and thank God I got, that was one of the three I had out of 10.
Personal reputation.
Yes.
It sounds like a version of integrity. Integrity, sort of, I say what I'm going to do, and then I do what I say. And it sounds like that's what you're focusing on with the concept of reputation.
That's part of it. And also that you can be trusted with confidential information, because when people ascend to different levels in organization, they get access to some information that, if they had loose lips, they could malign the company or their own reputation. So that, I think, personal reputation is, can you be trusted with information? Or let's say you hear or you heard some titillating information over beers with a colleague that you wouldn't kiss and tell, that you wouldn't, broadcast that information. And all that goes to reputation, leads into and builds onto relationships. Because great. If I can trust you.
We do have a caller with a comment or question. Caller, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. I have a quick question for Susan regarding the advice on keeping your job. Like, I understand the self-awareness, but if there's something going on that you're not aware in the organization, some C-level decisions, like downsizing, for instance, what would be your advice to be aware of, become aware of those issues? Like, where's the direction of the organization so you can make changes in your career?
Great. Thanks for the question, caller. So that's an interesting one. There's self-awareness, and then there's broadly awareness of what's going on around you. The caller is asking about situations or decisions that might happen outside of you, and how do you deal with that level of awareness?
That, unfortunately, because Suits and Ladders is a consolidation of the success and survival strategies that the 102 people I spoke to talked about, that didn't come up. Maybe Steve can take that one on.
Actually, there is something I can probably talk about, because I deal with this with a lot of the students that I'm teaching. And I'm trying to help them understand how they fit within the food chain. And one of the things I tell people is you need to be incredibly, not only self-aware of your own skills, you also need to be aware of where your company is and what's happening. And you always have to look for opportunities to make yourself almost recession-proof, layoff-proof. If you can do four or five different things and you have the ability to take on interesting and different workload, if I'm looking down my bench and I think, okay, I have to get rid of 30% of you, I'm going to keep the ones who are versatile and adaptable and have great attitudes. And if you're not reading the paper, if you don't understand the threats of your industry, you can get caught up in this. But you can take control. You control your own destiny.
To some degree. I mean, the caller is right. Sometimes you can't control it, but I take your point. Being versatile, adaptable, having a great attitude can help when it comes to that decision-making time of who stays and who goes.
You'd be surprised, though, how some decisions are made. Some are very cold, and you know, one company takes over another company, and they get rid of a unit. Sometimes that's completely uncontrollable. But I've been in merger situations where you've looked down and you say, who's the better candidate and for what reasons?
Yes. We just have a minute before we're going to go to break. Again, listeners, if you want to get a copy of the book, I think we have two or three of the four spoken for, but you can give us a call at 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000, or shoot me an email at mark@careercycles. What are some of the other ones, if you can just share with listeners, Susan, a couple of other key points, proven ways to keep your job safe. What else can you share with listeners about good advice for them, especially if they're employed trying to keep their job safe?
Emotional intelligence was one of the ones I failed on big time. The number one rule is to help your boss and keep him or her safe. And I realized, even though I was doing a great job, I was doing the right thing from a communication standpoint. I was failing miserably with respect to my boss. That had a ripple effect in terms of she didn't trust me. And as a matter of fact, she's one of the 102 people I interviewed. It gave me an opportunity to say, I was a really great consultant, but you didn't hire a consultant. You hired an employee, and I'm really sorry that I didn't support you in the way that you have the right to expect an employee would support you.
So interesting. And she was one of your 102 people. That's great.
So it allowed me to close that loop with her.
All right. So we're just going to take a break now. I think there might be one more book left or not. We're going to take a musical break. But if you want to call us over the break, it's 416-946-7000. And we're going to come back. Susan and Steve, thank you for joining us here in the first part of the show. We're going to speak to Mark Balazs in the second part, and then in the last few minutes of the show, we'll open it up to have a more broad discussion. So Susan Fromstein and Steve Keith, thanks so much for joining us at this part of the show, and we're looking forward to talking to you some more in the second part. Now, just as a prelude to my interview with Mark, he brought a piece of music. Mark, you brought a song here that we're going to listen to. What song and why?
I put Van Halen, Jump, just trying to get people jumping out of their seats, and let's get going on finding a job or helping them in their career search.
Right on. Stay tuned.
Kind of simple.
Career Buzz is brought to you by Harry Rosen Menswear. Visit us at 82 Bloor Street West and other GTA locations, or shop online at harryrosen.com for all your professional and business wardrobe needs.
Have you heard Bound? The brand new album from Kashka. Official album release party December 5th at the Great Hall. Find the new album Bound on iTunes now, or visit KashkaMusic.com and check out Kashka Music on Facebook. Career Buzz is brought to you in part by Samsung Canada. Live in an infinite world of possibilities. Experience more, live more, and capture more with the Samsung Galaxy S4.
Right here, right now, every day.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
We're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Before continuing on with today's show, I want to let listeners know we have an amazing archive of Career Buzz career stories. If you check the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com. On November 20th, we had these two enthusiastic interviews with Sarah Hendry and Greg Malzecki. Both were, I think, insightful on so many levels. Sarah, whose career changed one day when she met an old friend at the grocery store, and Greg, who just had this amazing non-linear career story that wound up as a professor at York University. So that was the November 20th show. On November 13th, we had Ontario's chief gemologist. Well, I never even knew that Ontario had a chief gemologist until we had Ron Gashinsky on the show and Kimberfire jewelry founder Jonathan Goldberg. That's the November 13th show. Check the Career Buzz button on the right side of careercycles.com. Mark Belash is president of TorontoJobs.ca. It's an internet and recruiting staffing company. He's also the author of a newly published book called Tales from the Recruiter, a Canadian recruiter's perspective on how to get that perfect job. Mark is a past guest on Career Buzz, and we've invited him back to share his views, talk about the new book, take your calls, and give away a couple of copies of the book. Mark Belash joins me live in studio. Welcome back, Mark.
Well, thanks, Mark.
Glad to have you back on Career Buzz. I was checking the archives there. It was June 2009.
Time flies.
we spoke last time on Career Buzz. In fact, it was a completely different studio at the time. So, Mark, what's happened since 2009 in your career and with TorontoJobs.ca?
So we've done a lot of things over the last 4 years. We've strengthened our career fairs that we do. We've been doing the Toronto Career Fair for now 6 years down at the Rogers Center, and we did it again last month. And we've now also set up the Mississauga Career Fair, which will be the second annual event in February. And that's out at the Living Arts Center on February 27th. So there's a job fair side of it. The website has changed a lot. We've got a lot more clients, a lot more customers and postings up there. We're at over 23,000 postings on there now. All positions within the GTA. And on the recruiting side, it continues on. I mean, the market has changed a lot over the last 4 years on the recruiting side, and it's made for some interesting dynamics and interesting client situations and candidates and job market overall. So it's been quite interesting that way.
And the events that you put on that have been great. I've been down, I think, at the job fair at the Rogers Center once or twice. And then you have an entrepreneurs event as well that I've been to, which was fascinating.
Yeah, so we've done, we started up, interesting that you mentioned, about 2009. We started the Toronto Entrepreneurs Conference in 2011. And we did 2012, 2013, and now 2014 is coming up in May of next year. So we have, had Robert Herjavec from Dragon's Den be a keynote speaker. We've had Mark Breslin from Yuk Yaks, founder of Yuk Yaks, as keynote speaker in 2012. We had Christine McGee from Sleep Country.
I heard her. In fact, I went to that session and heard her speak. It was very interesting to hear her career story.
Yes.
I should get her on Career Buzz.
It should be great. And then, you know, next year we're working on our speakers list. And really it's an opportunity to celebrate entrepreneurship in the city. And there's a lot of a lot of entrepreneurs out there. There's a lot of people, whether they're working out of their homes, out of their basements, people who want to start up a business, and of course, people who already have businesses like myself to get out and to network. So we've partnered up with the Mississauga Board of Trade, and we've been doing that for a few years now. So we're looking forward to our fourth annual event, and I would probably expect about 1,200 to 1,500 people that would come out to next year's event.
That's great. Congratulations on all those events. I know you used to be a recruiter. Now you're a business owner. What would you say to listeners about the top, I don't know, two or three skills that you use to be successful as a business owner?
Well, I'm also still a recruiter, so I love that side of my work and my day job. But as far as a business owner goes, I find that you really have to be passionate about what you do. You really have to go out there and every day wake up and get going on things, because the world is changing so quickly right now between the internet, the expectations of clients, of people in general. Like, everybody wants things right away, and
yes,
and the world doesn't move always that fast, and people want things for free too. It's a race to the bottom, as I always say. You know, it's a people think, oh well, it's costing me this much. How can I get it for less, or how can I get it for free? And I can find something that can give me something for free. So those are interesting changes from a business owner's perspective, and how to change that, and or how to stay on top of that and manage that, and keep thinking of how to generate more revenues and more revenue streams, because a business from 5 years ago changes very quickly, and you really have to change the way you do business. Otherwise, people aren't going to buy from you, and they're going to go somewhere else.
Is that your story too? Because I know when you started, people pay to put postings on the site, and that's one revenue stream. But I've been curious. I've seen all these events now. What are the main revenue streams for Toronto Jobs?
Well, for us, the Entrepreneurs Conference is pretty big. I mean, we sell exhibitor booths, we sell sponsorships, and we sell tickets for the event. So that was something. Certainly over the last few years, companies aren't hiring as much. They're not using recruiters as much. They're finding ways to post positions for free. So, you know, that obviously cuts into our business. So, you know, we've kind of thought, okay, well, where's the next revenue? Where's the next dollar going to come from? So the conferences, people are still have a demand, still have an interest. You can't replace the networking and the in-person type interviewing. And as long as you have good content where people can hear from speakers, this past year we had 17 speakers in three rooms. We had a financial room, we had an HR room, and we had a general main room. So, you know, that certainly helped our revenues for 2013. We still get postings, sales, and we still do recruitment. And I find that recruiters or companies still want to use recruiters, because it's actually quite tough to find good candidates.
Yes.
And a lot of candidates who are working have stopped really looking as much as they did back 8-10 years ago. They were much more, you know, I'm going to flip my resume, I'm going to send my resume, because they thought, the grass is greener somewhere else, B, I can get more money, C, my career can get going a lot faster. So so now candidates, job seekers, people who are working, people who are employed, are a lot more sticking to their positions, and they're not as quick about moving.
Yes,
unless there's something perfect out there. So it's an interesting dynamic. Certainly,
we're speaking to Mark Balesh here. He is president of TorontoJobs.ca. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT. That's 89.5 FM in the Toronto area, and worldwide at CIUT.fm. And listeners, we're going to invite you to call in with a comment or a question as we speak to Mark Balesh about his book. The numbers to call, 946-7000, 416-946-7000, or drop me an email at mark@careercycles.com. So, Mark, let's get to the book, Tales from the Recruiter. I've had a good look at the book. Thanks. You made one available to me last time we met. And there's the protagonist here is a guy named Chris, who's a recruiter. And I couldn't help picturing you every time I read Chris. So is Chris you?
It's a bit of an alter ego, yeah.
So what's one thing that might be surprising for listeners to hear about recruiters and how they actually work?
Well, I think people have sometimes an unrealistic expectation of what recruiters do or can do and how they can help. We can't help everybody. And, you know, there's a general statistic out there that says one out of every seven people that is interviewed by a recruiter will get a position. But that's seven people interviewed out of the hundreds that apply for a position. So,
who didn't get interviewed.
Yeah. So years ago, I remember talking to people, and maybe now the population is generally a little bit more knowledgeable about how recruiters work, but people would come to me and say, you know, where's my job? Or, you know, you haven't given me a job yet. And I would go to a recruiter thinking I'm going to get a job. So so that's one big challenge. And certainly as things in the market get tighter, I mean, the job market is pretty tight right now in that there's not as many jobs and there's more applicants for each job, that when you go to a recruiter, I tend to say, look, you have to have at least 80% of what they're asking for yes. a particular position. I mean, I get everything from security guards applying to tax positions. I get IT people applying to engineering positions. I mean, it runs the gamut.
It's just a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when it comes to a recruiter, like, you know, people shouldn't waste their time trying to go to a recruiter if they're – or apply to a recruiter or respond to a job posting if their experience really isn't in line with what the clients or the companies are looking for.
So I think that's an important point. I've heard that from a number of recruiters that we've had here. And sometimes I wonder, you know, there are these sites that people can go and get your resume written, and then they'll send it out to 1,000 recruiters, shotgun, you know. And I find, like, that's just a crazy way of job searching, and yet people do it. What's your opinion on those sites?
Well, I've heard that, and I don't see it as often. Certainly when the internet was growing and not that it's not growing right now, but as the job boards were growing, there was more opportunities out there for people to say, you know, I'll pay $100 or something and my email and resume will get blasted out to 1,000 recruiters. And the reality is sometimes I get emails from candidates, job seekers, and they CC or they send the same email to 100 different people.
Yes.
And I see the emails come through. And it just reduces the credibility of the person and what they're doing. It's not personalized. It's not it loses the credibility of the candidate overall. So you open up the resume and you kind of go, well, is this the kind of person that I want to play? So people have to be careful about that. And
so the tip for listeners is tailor your application, make sure it's got at least 80% of the things that job calls for, and don't do this scattergun approach.
Exactly.
Right on. So listeners, if you have questions, we've got the recruiter live here, Tales from the Recruiter. Well, we've got the guy behind the recruiter story, Mark Balazs. Give us a call. It's 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. So Mark, what should you do if a listener is called by a recruiter? And, you know, somebody comes on the line and says, hey, are you interested in moving? And you're just not sure. What if you've never been called by a recruiter before? You just don't know what to do. And you're sitting there at work, and maybe it's in public space, you know, like these days there isn't so many private offices. You're in a cubicle or something, and there's the recruiter on the line. What should you do?
Well, be polite, of course, and mention to them that, can I call you back at a later time? A lot of recruiters, I mean, including myself, I mean, we're on call. The earliest interview I do sometimes is 6 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes I'll speak with somebody at 9 o'clock at night. So just be really polite. Just say, you know, let me get your name and number down. I'll have to call you back because now is not an appropriate time. And of course, it can be awkward if somebody is at work and they're getting a call from a recruiter and it's like, who was that? Well, my doctor.
My career doctor.
So, let's just be really polite and just say, I'll call you back later. Grab the number and call them back. Most recruiters are pretty accessible. I mean, I get a lot of emails. I usually get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and go through all the emails that I got from the previous day because I can't keep up with them. So, you know, maybe not as many recruiters get as many emails that I get, but really, find a time that's good. Make yourself as available for recruiters as possible because, you know, your life's busy too, but they're busy as well. They've got a lot of different things going on. So make yourself available and accessible.
And then let's say you do get on the phone and the recruiter tells you that there's this opportunity. And you think about it, you're kind of interested. You know, what should you do? Should you go and have the interview with the recruiter? What would be the next steps?
I never think that you should not go to see a recruiter. I know a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't want to waste my time and I don't want to go and they don't really have a job. And I've heard all kinds of horror stories with people going for interviews with recruiters and then they never hear back from them again.
Yes, and common complaint.
But the thing is it's a two-way street in that, first of all, meet with them because that gets you on their database. And I know when I get people on the database, I can search from them when I get a position. So maybe I'm thinking about somebody for a particular position, but then that position doesn't work out. But a year later, something does come up and I search my database and I pull them up and I go, hey, listen, you know, John, Joe, whatever, I have a position for you. That wasn't exactly what you were looking for, but this could be something that might work out. So once you're on their database, it opens up a few more opportunities and doors. But what I was saying, a two-way street, is that you have to stay in touch with the recruiter too.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people, they come and they complain saying, hey, I never heard back. Well, you know, what have you done? What's, you know, have you been in touch with them? Because the candidates that stay in touch with me regularly, that I know, that are active, that are, you know, reachable and they're organized because they're in touch with me, they come to my mind first when I have a position that comes up for them.
So what's the frequency if a listener is trying to build a relationship with a recruiter? Every month, every 2 months, how frequently should you stay in touch?
Depends on the role. So for example, if the person's an administrative assistant, for example, and there's more volume of those kinds of positions, I would say, you know, Matt, if you're not working and you're anxious to find something, you know, maybe once a week, you know, do that rotation. If you're once a week,
wait a sec. You heard that here. Call your recruiter once a week. Let them know what's happening, what's changed.
Especially
stay on their radar screen.
Yeah, especially if you're active. Now, if you're a CEO or, you know, controller or, you know, a VP or something like that, where maybe the positions don't come up as frequently, maybe once every 2-3 months would be good, even if it's just a quick email.
Great advice. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment and want to win a book, give us a call. It's 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000, or shoot me an email. It's mark@careercycles.com. You are listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. It's 89.5 FM in Toronto and CIUT.FM worldwide. Mark, one of the subtitle here talks about how to get that perfect job. And I know there's a whole chapter there called Chapter 15, Is There a Perfect Job? Is there?
Well, I'm in my perfect job. And when I do a lot of presentations, I say to people, how many, show of hands, how many people think there's a perfect job out there? And aside from the people that say, oh, well, sipping margaritas by a beach, well, forget about those people for a sec. How many of you think there is a perfect job? And usually less than 5% put up their hands. I know I'm in my perfect job. My job might not be perfection for you, for someone else. What I typically suggests is a three-step process, which is very simple, but it takes a long time to do. First step is to make a list of what is that perfect job, whatever it is, whatever's on that list.
Like a list of different perfect jobs for you. Is that what you mean?
For you in particular. And I made my list 8 years ago, and I, you know, it took me 6 months to get into my perfect job. But, you know, making that list, like what is your perfect job? Is it working a larger company, smaller company? Where's the location? What do you want to wear to work? It could be as granular as, what industry, well, not so much industry, but, you know, as granular as who you want to work with. You know, is it a group of male, group of female, could a mix, doesn't matter, to something much larger to, you know, what industry you want to be in and where you want your career path to go. So once you have that list, second step is to figure out what that job is that matches up all the criteria that's on your list. And that could take a while as well. And then the third thing is to go out and get that position and reach out and speak with people who are in that position right now and ask them how did they get there and you want to learn. So if your dream is to be in radio, well, you know, pick up the phone and talk to people. If you know, there's CIT, there's other radio stations around, you know, make the effort. And I say that, you know, what would you do to get your perfect job? Well, if it's your perfect job, you'd probably want to work for free.
Right on. Yeah, I think that's really key, you know, to talk to other people. I find we at Career Cycles call that field research. You know, going and talking to people, I think it's one of the best ways that people can get a sense of what things are like. I'm amazed that people invest so much time, both in job search or even doing a program, like an educational program. You know, Steve Key earlier was talking about, say, a public relations program at Humber College. People do things without knowing what it's going to be like, and then 6 months later they get into it and they say, oh my God, this is not what I thought it was, and they have no idea what it was. So I really take your point. Call people and find out what it's all about. So we have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name?
Yes, hi, I'm Lily.
Hi there. What's your comment or question?
Well, I have a question about, it's sort of like a typical interview question, which would be under a behavioral type, like about your weaknesses, and not going into cliches that books advise. Like, what would you say would be the best to talk and what to avoid?
That's a great question. Thanks. You know, there's a whole chapter in Mark's book on interviews, so I have some thoughts on it. But Mark, the interview question is, what are your weaknesses? And you're just freaked out. What are you supposed to say?
Well, be prepared for that, because that's a pretty standard interview question these days anyways. You know, there's the old thinking about saying something that can really be construed as a positive. So, for example, well, my weakness is I work too hard, or I'm too honest about things. So, you know, is that a really weakness, or is that, you know, just something that you're there? I usually just say, look, like, you know, what are the areas that you feel that you most want to improve upon, and what are you doing to do that? So maybe in a previous position, a performance review indicated that, you know, your written communication skills aren't the best, they should be improved, or you should be more geared towards, a selling or whatever it is. You need to improve on your selling skills because you're in a sales position. So that's my weakness, but here's what I've done about it.
Exactly. So don't leave the interviewer with the idea that you have this weakness and you just don't do anything about it. Here's what I've done to overcome it, I think, is right. The most important part of the answer to that question.
Exactly.
Listen, guys, we just have a minute more, and I think we have given away all our books. We had, I think, all the callers here. So let me wrap up with each of you, and just in a sentence, if you could, from your own experiences and the twists and turns in your own careers, what can you share with listeners, one tip or one idea about what you've personally learned about making good choices, career and life choices? Mark, in a sentence.
So really love what you do. You know, be passionate about what it is that you do.
Great advice. Susan Fromstein.
Be willing to take a deep dive.
Yeah.
And jump be in. Responsible for the outcome of your decisions.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. And Steve Key.
Really, there is no finish line, and that you need to continue to look at ways that you can improve or enhance what you have.
Great advice from all of you. Steve Key, Susan Fromstein, Mark Balazs, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz today. And listeners, thank you for your calls and questions. We've given away all of our books here. If listeners want to hear the backstory on Mark Balazs' career, you can check the Career Buzz archive at careercycles.com, and you can look up Balazs, B-E-L-A-I-C-H-E. Oh, and I forgot to ask you, how do people find out more about the book, Mark, if they want to find out more?
Yeah, talesfromtherecruiter.ca.
And Susan, if people are interested in your book and they want to find out more?
SusanFromstein.com.
And they can find out about both of the books that we talked about.
Yes, they can.
And Steve, your career now is in the insurance?
It's in the insurance, property and casualty insurance. So anyone Googles me at Steve Key, K-E-E, they can find out just about everything about me. Or I'm on Twitter, Steve_Key, and I talk to everybody.
Excellent. Awesome. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Thanks to